It is a pleasure to be with you today. We're going to talk politics. Here we go again. Tis the season to do that. But I have a question for you. What's your litmus test to discern who to elect, who to vote for? And I'm going to say this, I might stir up some trouble, but it better be more than just a D and an R or an L or an I for your particular favorite party. There's got to be more to it than that, right? I hope so. I can tell you what my lens is. I want to elect a candidate that knows how to build Montana, how to build our country, who will help lead investment in infrastructure, who want to build quality communities for people, who want to see education thrive and be successful, who want local businesses to thrive, and who bring leadership qualities to the job. They're hungry to serve with passion. They're smart and they're humble. That's what I want to see in a leader. What do you want to see in a leader? Well, we're going to talk to two candidates for the U.S. Senate today. Michael Hummert, who is a Democrat candidate, and Kyle Austin, a Libertarian candidate for U.S. Senate, today on Voices of Montana. We are talking politics today, so let me give you a frame of reference for our conversations with our two U.S. Senate candidates. There's a leadership guru, a business guru that some of you may know. Maybe you've read his book. His name is Patrick Lencioni. He wrote the book, Five Dysfunctions of a Team. He has this book and program called Working Genius. And then he also wrote the book, Death by Meeting. None of us have ever experienced that. But I lean on Patrick a little bit for some guidance over the years when I functioned as an executive in organizations for many, many years. I wanted to lean on things that were beyond my own knowledge and maybe learn a little bit. One of the things Patrick says is when he hires a team member, Cody, he looks for three things. He wants someone that's hungry. He wants someone that's humble. And he wants someone that's smart. Those three things have to be in that person he's going to hire. And the hungry part is, are they eager to serve? And are they eager to learn? The humility part is they understand that it's not about them and that they have a willingness to learn how to do their job. And then they got to bring some smarts to the table, right? There has to be some capability to learn and then act with good information. So there has to be that combination of hungry, humble, smart. And I used to think about that as we were building a team. All right, is this person hungry? Are they desiring to do a good job? Are they eager to learn? Are they humble? They know it's not about them personally. And then are they smart? Are they going to bring, I was going to say, they've got to be smarter than Steve, which is not hard to do most of the time. And any of my former employees out there, if they're hearing this, that's right. We're all smarter than Steve, but I want people that are smarter. So as we kick off today's conversation, we're going to kick it off with Michael Hummert, who is the candidate for the U.S. Senate. But I wanted to give us that framework of what are we looking when we go to vote for or hire a leader for Montana and for our nation. So, Michael, welcome to Voices of Montana.
Thank you very much, Steve. I hope you find me not wanting in all these categories.
Well, I appreciate that. I'm not taking score on that, but I just think it's good for us in this season where we're hearing a lot of information about candidates to have a frame of reference for that. There has to really be more than just an R and a D to our decision-making, right? What are we looking for? But let's talk a little bit about you, Michael. Give us a little bit of your background as we start our conversation together.
I'm 67 years old. I lived through the 60s and 70s. That's where I cut my teeth and grew up on a small farm in southern Illinois. Joined the Army when I was 18. Got out of the Army. Joined the Navy when I was 20. And retired from the Navy in 1996. Moved to Helena, Montana to participate in the Highway Patrol Academy. And graduated from that, but unfortunately I couldn't uproot my family again and move it all the way across the state to Forsyth, so I had to decline on that. And then I started a remodeling company, and for 18 years I sat across the table from people and talked about how to finance their house and whether or not it was even a good idea for them to invest in their house at this time. So I like to think that that I did a great service in that respect. I had a lot of employees that thought I did, and as a matter of fact, one of my best friends is the first person that ever started working for me, so I couldn't have been too bad of a guy to work for.
No, Michael, thank you, and thank you for being an entrepreneur in Montana, and I want to thank you for your service.
Well, thank you.
Very much appreciate that. I'm curious, though, and I ask all our candidates that come in this, why are you running for the U.S. Senate?
Because I only have one shot at this. I'm 67 years old. And the United States Senate is the most powerful body in Congress. It's what represents the state's interests. At least that's how the Constitution was founded. Our country's in deep trouble. And no one seems to be talking about the issues that truly matter. They talk about wages. They talk about housing. But they don't talk about the things that are, these are all symptoms of a much bigger problem, like $39 trillion in national debt and $2 trillion a year that they keep adding to it that we don't have. And then they give a $400 billion a year tax cut to corporations that's costing us that much more in how much we borrow. We're spending $1 trillion a year in interest, and it's going to go exponentially up in the next 5 years. That's the reason why I'm running, is because our children deserve a future that you and I had, not something that, you know, is destroyed because we don't have the self-discipline not to spend future generations opportunities by borrowing. You know, that's the reason why I'm running.
Michael, I would, and I think most of our audience would say absolutely that national debt now almost at the doorstep of $40 trillion. And it wasn't that long ago that we were fearful about hitting $20 trillion. I remember those conversations like, oh my gosh, yeah. that is a mountaintop that we cannot get to. And we've surpassed that. Now we're moments away from hitting $40 trillion in debt, and the debt service, you're right, absolutely horrendous. And it's a drag on our economy. I hear everybody talk about that on both sides of the aisle, but I've yet to hear someone articulate, you know, what's a how do we approach this? Do you do it all at once and slash? And how would you, as a U.S. senator walking in as a freshman senator, approach tackling such a monumental a problem for our country?
Well, fortunately, I had the forethought to actually write an amendment to the Constitution and post it on my website, mikefrommontana.com.
Okay.
Along with four other amendments that we need to our Constitution. And to get this done as a freshman, you have to break the paradigm. You have to actually work across the aisle. The most powerful senators are the ones that are willing to cross the aisle and not vote party, but vote country. You have to be able to do that first off. And second off, you have to be able to rally the people around this cause. We've had so many causes in our nation's history. Civil rights, people out in the streets protesting peacefully about civil rights. And then there's all the gay rights even, and all the people that have gathered around nationalism. And this is a national problem we have. Look how destruction of 9/11 in 2001 brought this country together. And it was because we had a general purpose. If we stop talking about the cultural issues that we don't agree on and start talking about the structural issues that must be fixed, we can gain that unity that we need, and we can gain that force that will propel Congress into doing something. And that force comes from the people. Because one thing's for sure, being a realist, is we understand that everybody operates on self-interest principles.
Well, Michael, Go ahead, finish.
No, go ahead.
I was, you brought up this, you referenced to realist, and I was on your website looking at some of your materials ahead of our show today. And I appreciate, you know, that you have that information out there. People can access it and take a look. It helps them know what you're thinking. And you use the term realist. So tell me what you mean by that. And then I want to challenge you a little bit on this notion of across the aisle. Not that it's a bad thing. It just seems like more monumental than tackling the national debt. But first, tell it. When you say you're a realist, what does that mean?
A realist is someone who strips the emotional pull and the personal biases away from what they're looking at. And generally speaking, what you're looking at in front of you is what you have to confront. I'm not interested in being right. Right is an emotional feeling. I'm interested in being correct. When you govern the largest economy, the most powerful nation in the world, you better be correct, not right. Because future generations depend on what I actually do if I go to Congress. That's very humbling. It's actually a daunting task. So on to your next question.
Well, Michael, I was looking at some data the other day on polarization in our country. And there's been a national survey over the last couple of years that interviewed local elected officials. So city council members, county commissioners, school board members across the country. And there's a lot of them when you pull all that together. And they asked them about polarization. Interesting to me, what they said was that they believe the polarization at the national level was a significant negative problem for our country. And it was close to 90% of them said that. Yes, that is a problem. But then when you ask them at the local level, how do you view that? And the numbers were significantly lower, like half as much. If you're in a large community, your local elected officials, about 40% of those elected officials said, yeah, I think polarization is an issue. If you're in a smaller, less than 50,000 population, only about 28, 29% of those elected officials said, yeah, polarization is an issue at the local level. So you have these elected officials across the country that are hands-on with what's going on in their local community. And they're looking at Washington, D.C. and saying, wow, do we have a problem? And I hear it a lot. Well, I don't hear it. I hear it some. We got to go to the aisle. We got to find a way to partner and collaborate. But it just seems that there's strident positions on both sides, and we're just not going to find a way to meet in the middle. We'd much prefer to have the battle. What do you say?
Well, I say it's important for them to have the battle because they have to divide us so they can conquer. That's why politicians don't like to answer direct questions. If I could be so bold as to say I listened to Seth Bodner's interview on Voices of Montana, and he was asked a question about men and women's sports, and he quoted a bunch of stuff, and it was just gobbledygook. He didn't actually tell us the answer. It was just a one-sentence answer, and he just couldn't spit it out because he was afraid somebody would judge him. Well, I judge him wanting because he doesn't have the courage of his conviction. You know, it's simple. If you have XX, you're a female, chromosomes. And if you have XY, you're a male. And if you're a male, you shouldn't be playing in female sports. It's that simple. Unless the females all agree that it's okay for you to play them, which case it's perfectly okay. Mm. But I can't see how that's not easy to say. Title IX is what was put into the law to protect women and give them equal status under the law with men and to protect them. And we have an obligation to do exactly that.
Well, Michael, thank you for being clear and articulate on that position. I think that's counter to some folks in your own party.
Well, you have to have the courage to stand up for your conviction. And one of the things lacking federally in the Democrat Party, not in the Montana Party, and that's why John Tester called us poison, because he's part of a cabal in the National Party. But part of the problem in the National Party is it's all about scoring points, what you can say on public TV or on the Internet. to actually stir people up.
Michael, we're going to take just a little bit of a break. Excuse me for interrupting. When we come back, I do want to talk to you about your run against Senator Tester. I think in 2024, what was the goal you were trying to accomplish there? And then also, you talk about on your website a handful of laws that are important to save our country. Well, you're listening to Voices of Montana. I am Steve Arviscow, your guest host, and we're talking politics today. As I noted earlier, it is the season for that. Primary election's coming up on June 2nd, so there's a lot of activity going on. I've gotten things in the mail about candidates, and I'm sure you have as well. When we started, I talked to you about my litmus test for selecting a leader in our elected roles, either at the state level or the national level. You might have another litmus test. We'll talk more about that later with our next guest. We're talking to Michael Hummert, who is a Democrat candidate for U.S. Senate. And before I forget, if you're interested in hearing this discussion again, you can go to voicesofmontana.com. All of our programs are turned into a podcast format, and they're archived there for you. Just go to that website. You'll be able to hear this conversation that we're having with Michael today. Also want to let people know that you can send us a question via text, and that number is 781-627-5483, or you can give us a call, 866-627-5483. And we did get a text message. Somebody's curious about how you would respond to President Trump's tariffs. And they're proposing that might be a tool that helps us overcome our national debt. What's your position on tariffs?
My position on tariffs is simple. The president needs to have, whether it's a Republican or Democrat, needs to have the authority to actually set tariffs within reason. It is something that's a tool. It's not supposed to be something like a sledgehammer, like Donald Trump used it. You know, he's somewhat effective, but it's going to take an act of Congress, according to the Supreme Court, to actually fix this problem. And I'd be more than willing to roll my sleeves up and get busy on it. But I'm not going to be so bold as to say I know exactly what the right answer is here. There's a lot of professionals that I would have to confer with before I could actually make a decision on what I would do with tariffs if I had to vote on something in Congress. But understand that the president is the leader of our country, whether he's a Democrat or Republican, and he needs to have the freedom to maneuver. If you don't like the president, vote him out. And it is a point that even in war, such as the terrible issue we're in right now with Iran, I would have begged him on my knees not to do this. But now that he's done it, he's put so many things at risk, like the petrodollar, like Iran. They don't think they need a nuclear weapon to protect their country. They now know they need a nuclear weapon. So he is on death's ground when it comes to taking this nuclear material away from them. So this is a very complicated geopolitical issue, and the Senate should be involved in this. They should be getting briefs. They should be conferred with, you know. And that's one of the reasons we talked about walking across the party aisle.
Yeah.
We have to be able to agree on certain things in this country, in Congress, to move the ball forward for the American people. It's not supposed to be, as you said in the beginning, about personalities. It's not about me. It's about people that are going to be born 20 years from now, and what type of environment are they going to have because of what we did. So you have to have a little bit of forward thinking here when it comes to these things.
Michael, on your website, you talk about laws to save our country, and I had teased that we would chat about that a little bit. I want to be conscious of our time together this morning, and so thank you for your input on tariffs and those other topics, war in Iran, et cetera. I appreciate that. You have one of the laws that you're proposing that I noted on your website was the People's Right to Vote Act. Talk to me about that. What are you seeing, and what's that proposing to do?
Wow, we should have had the whole hour.
Okay, you got to put it in. Can you put it in a minute? We will.
It's pretty tough. The people's right. It's the law that I wrote to give the people in Congress, the representatives of the people of the United States, our fellow citizens, to give them a right to drive something to the floor of the Congress, to debate it for 30 days and mandatory vote on it within 15 days after that, whether it be brought up in the House or the Senate. It doesn't matter. And of course, the rules actually apply, but it's a somewhat complicated law with a lot of rules in it. But those rules are meant to keep people from abusing it and clogging up the system worse than it already is. In a nutshell, what it means is that 10 people in Congress can come together, write a one subject law or fix a law with one subject.
Yes.
And actually put that to the leadership in the House or the Senate, and it would be circulated within 15 days. Everybody would have to either sign yes, no, or not actually give a position on it. And if one third of the people in Congress think this is worthy of a vote on the floor, it would be brought to the floor. It would be debated. It wouldn't be in any other, you know, form. It would just be right to the floor. It would be openly debated, and then after 30 days, it would be required that it would be voted on. Now, the reason I did this is because currently, two people control the entire Congress, the Speaker in the House of Representatives and the leader in the Senate. And if they don't want to go into the floor of the Senate or the House of Representatives for a vote, they just table it. And that's unconscionable. It gives cover for people in Congress to say, well, I would have voted yes on that if they would have brought it up for a vote.
Right, absolutely.
Well, this enables you to bring it up for a vote.
And many House legislatures across the country, I know this to be the case in Colorado, I think maybe in Montana, if you bring a bill forward, it has the right for an up or down vote in committee. Man, there's so many congressmen and women out there with so many ideas, some of them, frankly, crazy. I think it's a management thing as well, but I hear exactly what you're saying.
One
or two leaders should not control the dais, as it were, in terms of what gets voted on and what doesn't get voted on. Michael, we're going to have to run. I've got another candidate coming up. We have just a handful of seconds. Thank you. How can people get a hold of you if they want more information?
Go straight to my website. It's all there. You don't have to guess what I'm going to do when I go to Washington, D.C. It's all written down.
Excellent.
Everything.
Thank you,
Amendments,
Michael.
Laws and everything.
Thank you for joining us.
Say hi to Kyle for me, would you?
I will absolutely do that. Thank you, Michael, for joining us on Voices of Montana. Hey, we're talking politics again today. And when I started our show this morning, I asked you all, what is your litmus test for selecting someone to lead our country, lead our state? And I haven't gotten a lot of feedback other than my own thoughts and thinking, but I'm intrigued by what you guys might be thinking. And I hope you're saying it's more, Steve, it's more than just that D or that R or the L or the I that might be behind a name. There's a quality of character in a person. And I threw out this concept of hungry, humble, and smart. I want someone that's hungry to serve and hungry to learn. I want someone that's humble enough to know that it's not about them. And I want someone that's smart and capable and can learn and act on good information and be an effective leader that way. We just had a conversation with Michael Hummert, who's a candidate for the U.S. Senate on the Democrat ticket. And we have online now Kyle Austin joining us now on Voices of Montana. Kyle, as a Libertarian candidate for the U.S. Senate. Kyle, welcome to Voices of Montana.
Yeah, good morning, Steve, and good morning, my fellow Montanans. I am Dr. Kyle Austin, candidate for United States Senate. And like you said, it's people need to get out there and stop voting for the party anymore. And my campaign isn't about being a Libertarian. It's about being a Montanan with roots. And people need to look at that. Who has roots in Montana that understands all four corners of our great big state? That's me. That's Kyle Austin, born and raised on the High Line, farmer, business owner that is expanding across the state of Montana to take care of our people in our communities. And I'm the only candidate with small business experience that understands the struggles that our small business owners face when it comes to big government stepping on our feet or creating red tape that prevents entrepreneurs from succeeding. And so that is a huge part of my campaign, is for people to get out this primary election and stop voting by the party, vote for the person. And Kyle Austin is the best candidate. And go out there and find Kyle Austin on that Libertarian ballot, fill in that oval and send that ballot back in, because if Kyle Austin wins the primary election, it is going to send a huge money, voice that dark money is not behind the candidate, because I will not accept dark money, PAC money, or big money. I am running this campaign on my own 2 feet.
Kyle, thank you for that introduction. I really appreciate the depth there that you're sharing. Can I back us up just a quick second? I was always intrigued when you launched Farm 406, and I kind of know a little bit about what your heart was in doing so. Would you talk a little bit about that? And then we're going to continue our conversation about your run for the U.S. Senate, but back up a little bit. Farm 406, yeah, what's behind
Farm
that?
Farm 406, so being a farmer and having a farm and being a pharmacist and doing both, I realized that I had this niche. You know, I've always been an entrepreneur, and I stepped out on a limb and I opened Farm 406 in Billings, Montana, with all the national competitors there in the middle of the pandemic. And everybody's like, man, this guy's dumb. And
I was like, no, I didn't think that for you. No, I didn't.
And, you know, but people just saw it take off and they're just like, what is going on with Farm 406? Well, it's hard work, folks, because entrepreneurs that put hard work, that's what America was built on, and that's what Montana was built on, and that's what Farm 406 is built on. And it's the heart of putting that energy into the communities and serving the people without the government politics, without the corporate regulations, and getting people the help that they need. And that's where we've seen Farm 406 exceed its walls in Billings, Montana. And today, well, actually last fall, I opened a second location in Butte, Montana, to help serve the communities in Western Montana as well. And so today I'm over in Butte, Montana, because I'm preparing for our finally a grand opening. It's been delayed a little bit, but I wanted to wait for good weather. But tomorrow we're having our grand opening in Butte, Montana at Farm 406 between 4 and 6 p.m., where we'll be serving free drinks, free tacos, and shaking hands. And it's a great campaign event, too, for people to come out and meet me for their next United States Senator.
All right, now I have to ask you, I had that on the bottom of my list. We were going to talk about Butte, America, excuse me. And where in Butte are you located? Where's your new store?
So the new store is on 3528 Harrison Avenue. So it's to the south of the interstate, out towards the south of town, that's rapidly growing. I mean,
yeah,
Butte has been kind of one of those communities that has been stagnant. We've watched Helena grow. We've watched Bozeman grow. We've watched Missoula grow. Finally, Butte is seeing that growth spurt. It's a reasonable place where people are coming here because they're like, man, property values are not out of control yet. And so they can move here. Me as a business owner looking around the state, it's like, yeah, property values are still reasonable. It's a great place to put a second location on this side of the state. And so Butte deserves Farm 406.
As I was telling you off air, I went to Montana Tech, so I have a lot of pride in my degree from Tech, and obviously then spent a lot of time in Butte. My wife's from Anaconda. When we got married, then we lived in Butte for a couple of years before I ran off and found a job. And so I love that community. I love what Butte and Anaconda mean for our state and the heritage that's there. So congratulations to you on your grand opening today. Let's go back and and I know you've given us a little bit of information and a flavor of who you are, but talk in from the heart about why you're running for U.S. Senate. Why do this? You've got businesses, you're an entrepreneur, you could stay focused there. Why?
Well, here's the thing is look at our candidates that are running, folks. A lot of the candidates out there, I feel like they're running for a city council. Okay, are they groomed? Do they have the experience? Do they have the energy to be a United States Senator? This is a big position. okay? People that I am running against and campaigning against should be running for a city council position, okay? Or a few of them are even past that age term limit that we talk about. You know, at what age should we kick these people out of Congress?
And so, careful when you're talking about age now. I'm just retired last year, Kyle.
There, you know, you know, but there's a big push out there for term limits and age limits in the United States Congress. And I agree with that. You got people like Massey that people are, you know, Massey, but he's been a 7-term senator. Folks, he should not be in there for 7 terms. That's talking about draining the swamp and getting dark money out of Washington, D.C. But when you say, why am I running? Well, when I was 18 years old, I made the decision someday I want to be a United States senator. And this is the year, you know, I've been grooming myself slowly out there campaigning on the trail as, you know, running the Eastern Congressional District. Yep. As a dress rehearsal. And this year I was keeping my name out there. I was going to run against Senator Steve Daines, and he dropped out. Well, that's the wake-up call. It says, Kyle, this is the year for you to put your foot on that gas pedal and take the win. Because Montana needs someone, like I said, with roots. Born and raised on the High Line, agriculture. Went to school at the University of Montana and graduated with a doctorate of pharmacy degree. And then he travels the entire state. I mean, I got people there, Miles City, Montana, where I was in the Bucking Horse Parade last Saturday, walking that parade, and I had young kids coming up to me, hey, Mr. President, hey, Mr. President, and you know, it made me feel good. But I also gave those kids an extra piece of candy because, you know, I appreciate their support as well, even though they're not old enough to vote.
Yeah, not quite yet, but they might remember that moment. Kyle, I was on your website looking at just to so I could get a healthy background on the work that you're doing and what you're saying there and the information you're providing. And one of the things caught my attention. You say that one of your key issues or platform pieces is reforming the Department of Agriculture. What's up with that? What are you thinking?
Well, as we know, the agriculture struggles, right? And farmers and ranchers have become a subsidy of the government. Okay, we got to change that. You know, farmers and ranchers don't want to be subsidies of the government. They don't want to have to go to the USDA office for a check every year, or wait 10 years for a farm bill, folks. We need to overturn the USDA on all fronts. One of them is the interest, you know, loan interest. I mean, right now, farmers and ranchers, when they're struggling with fertilizer prices and high diesel prices, they have to go to a bank at the high interest rates and pay interest on those until they can get their produce to market. Why is our USDA not offering a low interest, if not zero interest plan for our farmers and ranchers to get them through the critical times instead of being a subsidy? I mean, that would be a win-win. It allows them to still do business but not get raked over the coals with the interest rates at the banks. The other thing is we talk about workforce. Our USDA is not helping with workforce. There should be a platform on there for matching our egg producers with out-of-country migrant workers that want to come here for 6 months and help with harvest time and have that matching. But it also needs to go back to local kids. What are we doing in our schools to get kids that are coming out of high school to go do apprenticeships and learn agriculture and actually work on those farms? There's a lot of programs with that. What about trade? Trade is a huge thing with our agriculture. The USDA needs to step up and work with that, especially with the Canadian markets, with what goes across the border. There's a lot of things, like I said, with the USDA that we can do better.
Kyle, we're going to take a little bit of break, but when we come back, because of your experience in education, being a pharmacist, and I want to talk to you just a little bit about healthcare reform, as you have, maybe an interesting perspective to share. I also want to talk to you about the primary election coming up just a matter of weeks away. So, wow, we are talking to Kyle Austin, Libertarian candidate for U.S. Senate. Kyle, thank you for joining us on Voices of Montana. Today, I want to talk about healthcare reform. Now, let me frame this for you. My wife's been a nurse for 32 years. She's going to retire soon because she's got a, you know, it's time for her to keep track of me. My son is a physician. My daughter's a mental health therapist. I mean, I'm surrounded by folks that are in the trenches and that so I don't know what I'm talking about in detail, but I have a sense of the pressure and challenge that healthcare delivery is for both the care provider and then frankly us as consumers. So what do we do with this system that just seems to be large, expensive? We've got high quality healthcare. Access is a challenge. What's your take from your experience?
Well, Steve, as a pharmacist for 18 years and a business owner, I see it all. I hear it all from all the patients out there. I hear from the providers as well. And it's not something that we can put a Band-Aid on anymore. Obamacare was a failure, as you know. And my healthcare 2.0 plan is to overhaul the entire healthcare system. We literally have to see what we've done wrong, and we have to overhaul it and start fresh. What we see today is a lot of wasted money. We see a lot of corruption. We see a lot of inefficient programs out there. And as a business owner, you have to run programs efficiently, correct? And so my plan as your next United States Senator is healthcare 2.0. We're going to flip it. We're going to consolidate all these government programs, the Medicare program, which is 80 years old and it's still a paper process, Medicaid programs, TRICARE programs, VA programs. We're going to consolidate all those and put them all under one roof. And so there's all this wasted money and efficiency that's going to get us back on track, because right now the taxpayers are paying billions of dollars and none of that money is getting down to the patients that deserve it. And the providers, with these PBMs and insurance companies out there that are undercutting the payment and writing the rules for our providers, that's interfering with that provider-patient relationship, that is a problem with our healthcare system. And that is what I want to fix. Folks, we have enough money out there. It's not about taxing more. It's about using the money that we're spending efficiently and affordable. And when we do that, you will have accessible healthcare nationwide. The other thing I want to do is get rid of this statewide licensing. We run into where the Department of Labor in Montana is prohibiting licensed practitioners to come to the state and practice without paying a fee and taking another test. Folks, it doesn't matter if you're a pharmacist in Montana or a pharmacist in Florida. We are trained the same way, and we practice pharmacy the same way, and the same way the doctors do. And
Kyle,
so our licensing laws are preventing providers from taking care of people in eastern Montana.
Understandable. I really appreciate that. And Kyle, thank you for joining us today. All the best to you with your grand opening today for Farm 406 in Butte. If you're in that area and you want to spend some time and maybe meet Kyle, that would be a great place. Go spend money in Butte is what I'm going to encourage people to do. At Farm 406. That is later today from 4 to 6, right, Kyle?
Tomorrow, 4 to 6.
Tomorrow. Thank you for correcting me. Tomorrow, 4 to 6, Farm 406 in Butte.
Thanks for joining us for the podcast, and join us weekdays live from 9 a.m. to 10 a.m. for more Voices of Montana on great radio stations all across our Treasure State.